Hi. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone. We will begin with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice. And now the other members of the court will introduce themselves by order of seniority as to service on the court.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
John Friedenberg.
Counsel, the first case of the day is State versus Garcia. Mr. Island, good morning to you, and Ms. Duffy, good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin? Very good, then, Mr. Island. You may approach and you may proceed.
So without consent has a specific statutory definition, and what that is set out is, did you overcome somebody by use of force? Did they express a lack of consent? Or did you deceive them? And if any of those portions are not present, then the offense has not been committed, at least under that provision. Then we have is whether or not someone's incapable of consent. And I think that seems to be that they're physically incapable of providing consent or mentally incapable, some type of severe mental defect, some type of severe intoxication, something like that. In the absence of those facts, did you want to say some, Justice Friedenberg?
Please finish your thought, then I'll ask.
I was going to say,
I've already interrupted you with my look, so I'll just interrupt you.
No, that's right. If you're going to ask a question, I might as well have the question. Go ahead, Your Honor.
Can the jury be split on which version they are finding that under?
That I'm unclear about. I would say no after I read the Barber case. It seems to suggest, now that's the Court of Appeals. I understand this is a different court and has superior authority over that. But it seems to be, unless there's specific evidence that would suggest that, then I don't believe they could be. They would have to be unanimous on the theory of whether it was by absence of consent or under some type of severe impairment.
So how would that be achieved? Would there be a special ballot of some kind?
Not a special ballot. I think the evidence, when it doesn't support the fact, the issue that's being submitted to the jury, that shouldn't be submitted to the jury. I mean, if there's none of these specific without consent, as it's been defined by overcoming someone by force, threat, or express consent, then that shouldn't even go to the jury.
So what do you think the state's theory was here?
The state's theory seemed to be some type of possible impairment, and yet the evidence didn't support that either. In fact, the testimony by Mr. Hamilton was specifically that, look, I was not drunk. I didn't have enough to reach that type of stage, and especially this was 4 or 5 hours later where this incident occurred.
Well, he passed out on the couch.
Right.
Urinated himself on the couch.
Right. Earlier at some point. Right. But at the time this incident had occurred,
he was on a different couch, totally nude.
Correct.
Doesn't know how he got there.
At least, yeah, doesn't remember. States he doesn't remember. That is true.
But, so is that not impairment?
Not, I think, as it's been defined as some type of severe physical or mental defect, such as severe intoxication.
Aren't you asking this court to reweigh the evidence?
No, I'm not. I don't think if I were doing that, I don't think I would have any option here if I'm asking you to reweigh the evidence. What I'm saying is the without consent, there's no evidence of any of those prongs. And because of that, what happens now, we get into possible mental impairment, except for all the evidence at the time of the fellatio was that there was no impairment on the part of Mr. Hamilton. And that's the evidence. There may have been something from earlier, 4 or 5 hours earlier. His testimony, the officer's testimony, the girlfriend's testimony was all that he was clear and didn't appear impaired and didn't seem to have any problems understanding.
Are you asking us to say, as a matter of law, he was not impaired?
I believe that the evidence would say that, yes, because of all the testimony that was presented from the time the act occurred. And that's where we're talking about, not sometime 4 or 5 hours earlier in the evening. And I think that makes a big difference, especially because we have the complaining witness who says, look, I'm not impaired. That's his testimony.
Is this binary, consent or no consent?
I apologize, Justice. What do you mean binary consent?
We're exploring consent.
Yes, to some degree, other than I don't think we need to because the definitions are clear. It has to be by, without consent, is by force, threat, expressed, or by deception. We don't have any of those facts here. When the definition is clear of what without consent means, we have to plug them into those issues in order.
So the law is, in your view, consent or without consent?
The law is without consent, and without consent is defined.
Are there other possibilities?
Yes, if you're mentally or physically impaired to a significant degree to be incapable of consent.
And those are alternatives.
That is one alternative. That is true. And then there's the underage one. Those are the three that are provided for in the first degree sexual assault statute. And so that's why I think you have to look at those issues, what the facts are, do they support, and whether that should even go to the jury. If the facts don't support those definitions, that shouldn't go to the jury. And because we have this question in this case, at best we have a question of was he capable of consent. I don't think the evidence supports that based upon all the testimony. But now we get into confusion. I think that's a little bit in the Barber case they discussed, that one was only an incapable of consent. They should have never put without consent because there was no expressed lack of consent, threat, force, deception, those type of matters. So I think that was one of the concerns in that case. And that it is, I think, and we as attorneys have been using it maybe a little inartfully. I know I have, because we've been talking about consent thinking it maybe is some type of hybrid, but I think it's not. You got to look at each of the definitions, and does the action fall within that definition?
Are those other words without consent? Is impaired without consent?
The impaired says, it doesn't say without consent. It's, now I apologize, I wasn't thinking of it that specifically. I thought it was, unable to express consent with implied. But I apologize, I don't know the exact term. I didn't come prepared for that. But the belief is you have to be significantly impaired, intoxication, mental, physical defects, so you're unable to provide that type of consent to go forward. And what we usually see seems to be either the significant intoxication, somebody who's just clearly blotto, which we don't have here, or they have some type of mental inability to consent because of their condition.
Here the alleged victim claimed to be sleeping.
Right.
How does that factor into the legal analysis?
I would say that goes into the without consent prong, and then it depends on the actions of it. In this case, he was sleeping, he wakes up, and he participates in the action. There's no expressed lack of consent. There's nothing saying, hey, whoa, what are you doing, anything like that, or Don't touch me, get away from me, anything like that. In fact, he goes ahead and he participates and pulls Mr. Garcia's head into it to engage the fellatio rather than to reject it from him. He thought maybe at the time, his mental process of what he thought is not relevant. He thought it might have been his girlfriend waking him up that way, which then he had no objection to. And it wasn't until after he ejaculated, finally figured out who was participating in it, that all of a sudden he decided he needed to leave.
Could the fact that the alleged victim was sleeping be relevant to 28.310.1b?
Is that the severe?
The whether the victim's mentally or physically incapable.
I don't think so, because the way we seem to keep defining that is some serious defect. I think that could go into use of force. And like in the Mueller case, she was sleeping. Court of Appeals, again, I understand. But she was being told it was her boyfriend. That was the deception. It fell right into the without consent portion of the first part of it, not the severe mental impairment. Because just being sleeping isn't a severe impairment. It's only a slight impairment. You wake up or something says you're able to express that content.
That statute doesn't use the term impairment, right?
No, it doesn't use the term impairment. I think those are the case law that has been using. And I apologize, those are the ones that I most often see or that we run across is that kind of severe intoxication situation. But we're looking at some type of severe mental defect or some type of severe physical that you have the inability to express that lack of consent. Thank you. I'll reserve any remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Ms. Duffy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Appellant assigned two errors on appeal, the sufficiency of the evidence to support his conviction, which is sort of divided into two subparts, and today this court addressed the issue of consent with appellant, as well as the court's instructions to the jury. I had originally intended to address the actual definition of penetration, but based on this court's discussions with appellant, I'll start with consent. The evidence at trial showed the victim was asleep and that he woke up to appellant fellating him. And I'll note that in the Bill of Exceptions, in the victim's testimony on page 114, the victim testified, he stated, his girlfriend had long hair and the defendant had short hair and that ejaculating is what woke him up. And he knew instantly it was not his girlfriend. So he woke up to the appellant fellating him, which means he was asleep when it began, and he did not wake up until it was over. So being asleep, he is not able to consent to what is occurring.
So you think sleep is enough to be
physically
incapable of resisting?
Or of appraising the nature of one's conduct. I don't know how a person who's asleep is going to be able to determine what is occurring and to consent to it. Again, unfortunately, we're citing a lot of Court of Appeals cases before this court today, which I understand, as appellant does, that they are not binding on this court. In State v. Interiano Alvarado, a 2019 case from the Court of Appeals, which is cited in appellee's brief, the Court of Appeals had discussed whether the victim in that case was mentally or physically incapable of consenting, and that case did turn a lot on the amount that the victim had to drink that day as well as eat that day. And it stated on page 342, but even if the evidence was insufficient for a jury to conclude that the victim was intoxicated beyond the point of resisting or appraising the nature of her conduct, first degree sexual assault can also be found where sexual penetration occurs without the consent of the victim. The victim testified she was sleeping while the appellant was touching her inside the lips of her vagina. Therefore, she could not have given consent, and a jury could have determined on the basis of this testimony that the appellant had sexually penetrated her without her consent.
What do you make of the evidence of alcohol consumption in this case?
Well, Your Honor, I think that is something the jury could have considered. I disagree. I don't think that we need to know. I think as long as the jury finds that it was either without consent or while the victim was mentally or physically incapable of appraising the nature of her conduct, I think it doesn't really matter. If half the jury found the victim was very intoxicated or feeling the effects of the alcohol he'd consumed, or if he was asleep and unable to consent, I think the issue is whether he consented through actually giving consent or not giving consent or being unable to consent.
What are you basing that split verdict theory upon?
Well, Your Honor, I think the jury was instructed one way or the other. It was instructed an or. So the jury instruction number 3, which is page 8 of the transcript, the elements were that 3A, that the defendant did so without the consent of the victim, or B, that the appellant knew or should have known that the victim was mentally or physically incapable of resisting or appraising the nature of his conduct. I don't have an exact case on point, but I think the jury was not instructed one way or the other. For example, in manslaughter cases, we don't need to have all of the jury finding it occurred through one part of the statute. It's sufficient if it occurs, if a jury finds that it occurred. This court is obviously free to differ, and I know you will let me know whether you do differ, so it will provide some guidance for us in the future.
But you're saying these are two different paths to conviction.
Correct, Your
Honor. That physically incapable of, let's say in this case, appraising mm-hmm. what's going on isn't necessarily the antithesis of consent, is just a different pigeonhole.
I think so, Your Honor. I think I would need more time to think that through, but yes, I think my point is that whether he was asleep and unable to consent, so it was without consent, or whether because of alcohol consumption he was unable to fully appraise his conduct, we have fellatio occurring and when he did not want it to or could not.
And the facts supported either rationale, in your view?
I think so, Your Honor. There was testimony from the that he had urinated himself in his sleep, that he had gone to sleep fully clothed, woke up on a different couch with no clothes on, didn't remember. There was testimony that he was asleep, he was kind of dreaming, and then he woke up and realized what was happening. So I think under either scenario, the victim was unable to fully, to know what was occurring to him.
Is this actually an issue that was assigned by him?
Your Honor, appellant did address the issue of consent in brief, and I believe it was on page 11 of appellant's brief. I don't recall whether the sleep was discussed, but...
Is it encompassed by the challenge to the jury instructions?
I believe, actually, Your Honor, that the jury instruction focused on whether fellatio, where the defendant is the fellator, is performing the fellatio, is sufficient to meet the definition of penetration for purposes of first-degree sexual
assault. And the proposed instruction had the actors in reverse.
Correct, Your Honor. And the instruction given was taken from the pattern jury instructions, and it provided that either the victim's mouth engaged with the defendant's penis or vice versa to be the definition of penetration for this case. I can move to that issue briefly if this court would like. And as I noted, the appellant contends that performing fellatio on another is sexual contact but not penetration. It should come as no surprise that the state disagrees. As we noted in our brief, Nebraska Revised Statutes Chapter 28, Section 318, defines penetrations for purposes of sexual assault, and it includes fellatio in the definition. And the statute does not distinguish between fellatio where the defendant is the performer or the recipient. It simply states that for purposes of these statutes, fellatio is considered sexual penetration. And the evidence at trial showed that appellant fellated the victim. This was sufficient to meet the definition of penetration for purposes of first-degree sexual assault. And because the state goes with that interpretation, we believe the jury was correctly instructed on the issue of penetration for this case. I am happy to answer more questions from this court, but if there are none, we request you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
40 seconds, Mr. Island.
The problem is, I think we're assuming without consent means what we mean on an individual basis. The legislature specifically defined what that means. It doesn't mean that he didn't say he didn't want it. It needs some type of expression, threat of force, or those specific instances. That didn't occur here, and that should not have gone to the jury. If there is some type of possible impairment, then we get into confusion. I think that's the Barber case, Court of Appeals, I understand, but talks about where there's no evidence, it shouldn't go to the jury, and it should only go on the one theory. And in this case, the evidence, I think, is confusing because even if you want to suggest that he was sleeping, he did know before he ejaculated that something was going on, he was participatory in it, and then came fully awake. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. We will go on to the Next case of the